I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about viewpoints. Viewpoints, of course, are basic in space and actually basic in havingness. And I hope that you have some inkling now of the fact that havingness is condensed space. And when somebody knows he can't create or look at anything easily, when you tell him to reach out into space or look at space, you uncondense his havingness. Let's say this fellow's going along in life and he says, now look, he said, I have a certain store of peanuts. And this is all I have. And if I do anything at all, it will disturb this pile of peanuts. Now, here is this pile of peanuts. And if I make some space, I've got to take four peanuts and put them out in the room. He actually doesn't do this, but I mean, he doesn't need to put out dimension points. But he thinks of this. If I made any space, I'd have to take four of these precious peanuts and put them out in the room. Now, supposing you said to this person who had this pile of peanuts, is his total possession, now take four of those peanuts. See, he has a finite number of them. Take four of those peanuts and put them in the room. Now take four of them and put them around the house. Now take four of them and put them around the town. And now take two of them and put them in your childhood home. Now put a couple in the center of the city. And he looks at this dwindling pile of peanuts and he says, no. He doesn't like that. Well, that would be the same thing as you saying to somebody, now spot a spot in the center of the room, now spot a spot above the building, now spot a spot outside the building, or actually just this, reach and withdraw from your childhood home. Now reach for it, withdraw from it, reach for it, withdraw from it, reach for it. Of course, he's reaching and withdrawing from something illusory. He probably has a picture of the childhood home. He's not really reaching for the childhood home, you see. And the more he reaches and withdraws from the childhood home, the more distance you are entering in, you see. It's just the problem of distance. Every time you enter distance in, you got space entering in. So you say, reach and withdraw. You're just taking his pile of peanuts to pieces. Now, almost any process or any process which does introduce distance then reduces the havingness of an individual. Anything which condenses distances increases his havingness. So anything which reaches as a problem, anything which reaches decreases his havingness. Anything that withdraws increases his havingness. You should say, reach and withdraw then balances. Well, it doesn't. Mostly because he isn't withdrawing anything when he comes back. But that's just a rough rule of thumb. Now, here we have this fellow. We should run him this way. Now, put four peanuts around the room. All right, you got them around the room? You know, in other words, spot some spots in the space of the room. Okay, now let's put four peanuts around you and pull them in on you. Okay. He'll take the peanuts quite ordinarily out of the corners of the room and pull them in on him again. Well, he's got his peanuts back. Okay, he says he got away with that. Now you say, put these four peanuts around the building. So he does. Now you say, put four peanuts around you and pull them in on you. Well, you take those four peanuts that are around the building and pull them in on him and put them back in the pile. You know, he's conserving his havingness. Now you say, okay, now let's spot some spots in space. So he puts four peanuts floating in space somewhere in the vicinity of the room. And then you say, pull four peanuts in on you. Oh, he says, I don't understand those. He's getting lazy now, you see. And, yeah, you'll just leave those four peanuts out there in space, and he'll put up four new peanuts that he mocked up and pull them in on himself. What the heck is going on? Something is liable to say in his machinery. Looky here, I had just put out four peanuts, and I pulled in four peanuts, but I've got as many peanuts as I had before, and there are still four more than I had floating out in the middle of the room. Hey, what's going on here? You know, something alerts to the fact that the truth of the matter is he can create many more piles of peanuts that he's got sitting there. All right, so we say then to him, now put some four peanuts around your childhood home and put some out in space and put some elsewhere and put some elsewhere. And he's starting to watch this pile go down. Ooh, he starts to get nervous. He doesn't want to... You see, if he didn't have any peanuts at all, he would be a complete pauper and this would finish him. So you just go on. You say, put four peanuts somewhere else. Put four more peanuts out, you know, Oh, no. I'm sorry, but peanuts have become very valuable right here at this moment. And he starts to get nervous. So you better give him some new peanuts. So you put up 8 peanuts around him, pull them in. You tell him, put up 8 peanuts, pull them in. 8 peanuts, pull them in. 8 peanuts, pull them in. Stack's getting bigger now. 8 peanuts, pull them in. Now maybe this time you decide to be real vicious about the whole thing and just make him do this for a while. Well, by golly, he starts getting peanuts that are heaped up on the table and they're flowing over onto the floor. He'll tell you something like, you know, I'm beginning to feel stuffed. I'm beginning to feel too full. I'm too heavy. If I put in one more galaxy, a fellow said to me one day, I'm going to sink straight through the crust of Earth. I don't think he would have, although the crust is only 40 miles thick and below that's nothing but molten lava. But anyway, he was getting too heavy. You're overcargoing him. But it's better to overcargo him any time than it is to take it all away. Because if you give them enough peanuts back, pretty soon they're perfectly willing to take peanuts and fill up garbage cans with them and throw them in the river and dump them in fires and everything else. In other words, they'll be more relaxed with their havingness, more relaxed about their havingness, which is to say not so worried about loss. And you get somebody and you've repaired his havingness up to one of these superabundances. And you say, now look out there in space and locate that spot and that spot and that spot and another 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 spot. And he says, down with it. I can go on locating spots. Well, maybe you don't achieve this for maybe 10 hours of processing to a point where an individual can actually just go on locating spots in space ad infinitum without the least concern about the way this decreases havingness. He has stumbled across the great truth that he can mock up anything he wants or needs in terms of havingness. So in processing somebody, we are going toward the goal of abundance, just like it says in the factors. The goal of abundance. If a man cannot have abundance, he cannot have space. If you have ever experienced a great loss, you can possibly recall the feeling that the entire environment pulled in on you at that moment. It pulled in on you from below and above and everything else. You'll occasionally track back a preclear in processing. And somebody processed him very poorly and took away far, far, far too much havingness. You know, just got in there savagely and tore up everything and chewed up everything. Of course, he'd only have done this in the old days if the guy had really been butchered, you know, as a pre-clear. I mean, he'd had to have breaks and auditor's code and everything else before this thing come by. You can sometimes trace a case back who was occluded to a moment when, all of a sudden, it was brought to their attention by an invalidation or an evaluation or a mean auditor or something. You see, auditor code breaks. It was brought to their attention suddenly, do you know that I am just losing everything there is, and the individual just sort of reaches out into all the environment around him, below him, and above him, and pulls it all in. Crunch! Only what's he pull in? He doesn't pull in anything he mocked up. He pulls in a lot of electronic standing ridges he's got all over the place. Some of them belonged in Boston, and some of them belonged in Florida, and some of them belonged in the childhood home, and so forth. And he just pulled in Boston and Florida and the childhood home and everything else right on top of his head. Now he says, I've got all this havingness, but this is a rather intolerable situation, so I'll paint it all black. He just does this. He paints everything black and so forth. That's a sudden occlusion with regard to loss. Now, let's say this fellow's been going along in life. He's been doing all right. He made his first million when he was 22 and another million when he was 26 and another million when he was 27 and 18 or 20 million more, you know, like some guys could do once upon a time when we had a free country. And it's against the law to make money now. You get fined for it. If you don't believe that, consult the Income Tax Bureau. By the way, I don't want to knock income tax. Income tax is merely a penalty for having. And the government has a right to penalize people, has a right to kill people, has a right to break the country. And it owns the country, after all. And the people have nothing to do with it. So don't get mixed up politically here. The world today is gauged so that you can't have a thing. If you do have anything, you get your teeth kicked in. Anyway, I'm totally impartial politically. And this fellow comes along, and then one day, one day, why, there was some senator who wanted a couple of constituents more than he had before, so he passed a law saying all people engaged in making money out of peanut oil will now be taxed 110% of their taxes that they have already paid to the government, plus 220% of their income. You know, some reasonable law. And this guy, all of a sudden, is presented, lock, stock, and barrel, with a complete loss. You know, zoom! His bank balances were good. His industry has earned him some money. He got people working. Everything's going along fine. And then all of a sudden, zing, gone. It's the ratio. It is the speed of loss. And that is a little factor which is not terribly valuable in processing, but it certainly can be used to understand life. How fast did he lose it? If you break the news of Papa's death to somebody simply by saying, you know, this person's very well attached to their father, and you come up to this person and you say to them, well, your father's dead. The speed of loss is too great. The person is liable to go completely unconscious or grief-stricken. You can really stick them hard. But now let's say you say, well, now, just got a telephone call from your home. Yes, yes, yes. It's about your father. What about my father? Something wrong with my father? Well, you know, your father was a pretty old man. He's sick. Well, he's dead. The person will orient this fact. They themselves have done the realization. You haven't poleaxed them. The same person, with the news imparted in that fashion, would still be standing on their feet. If the news were broken too fast, that is to say, speed of loss was too brief, too much loss in too little time, why, they would go unconscious. Now, you can stand to lose a body over a period of 70 years. You do, scrap by scrap, little by little. But when you lose one in 70 microseconds, it makes an effect. As a matter of fact, it'll put a standing ridge there that is very interesting to behold. Well, what's this fellow do who is fined for having made $5 or $6 million and put a lot of people to work in the society, who has fined his total income? At the second of loss, an enormous loss of this character. See, he could have lost $100,000 this month and a half a $100,000 the next month stretched it out, and he would have made it all right. But he lost all this all at once. What's he do? The material objects go away so fast as to leave him with no actual havingness. So he reaches out into the entire environment and pulls in every standing ridge he can get his hands on. His spirit, when he does this, is a sort of a self-punishment. Well, I will make a good mess out of it. You know, he sort of has that feeling. Well, he'll bring in every engram he's got in the bank. Just swing. And you find him a little bit later sitting in a solid ball, and you wonder what the hell he's sitting in. Well, what he's sitting in is something very easy to recognize. At some time or another, he has had too much loss in too little time, under circumstances which themselves were very antagonistic. And when he recognized that he had lost this, he reached out to every part of the environment he could reach almost simultaneously and pulled the whole darn environment in on him. Now, this left him in a state of not being able to have, because it was very uncomfortable having all this electronic material which he pulled in on himself. That was very uncomfortable. So he says, I don't want any more. Believe me, not only did I lose everything, which convinces me I can't have anything, but now that I have pulled in what I could have, which is to say engrams and ridges and things like that, they're so uncomfortable and painful that I want nothing to do with them either. And you find an individual negating against havingness. He doesn't want anything to do with havingness, and yet he has to have something to do with havingness. So you tell him to locate some space. Oh, he says, that's easy. I can throw this stuff away. You know, I'll let it go. That's all right. Some more space. Locate some more space. Locate some more space. Locate some more space. Locate some more space. he starts to get sick, because the truth of the matter is he needs a certain amount of havingness. You know, on a sort of a self-destructive impulse, he's perfectly willing to unload the whole bank. You'll find these individuals who are very heavily occluded will run out and eat up and chew up energy and waste it and do other darndest things with it they know they can't have. Well, you process this individual by locating some space and then increasing his havingness by making him mock up something acceptable. A person probably can't mock up and pull in anchor points, but he can mock up an acceptable grandmother or an acceptable body or an acceptable pair of eyes or an acceptable tooth, you know, decayed and aching. He can mock up some sort of havingness. His acceptance level is right there for you to tap, just like that. And so you repair his havingness a little bit, and you then have him spot some space and repair his havingness and have him spot some space and repair his havingness and spot some space, and all of a sudden, oh, he says, maybe I could have something. He says, it's quite amusing here. I seem to find that I can have myself in total rags and starved. I can have something. I can have myself in total rags and starved. The funny part of it is that's more than he had as he was sitting there in the chair before you gave it to him. Totally starved and in rags is in better condition, really, than he actually is in. He's carrying along on the third dynamic, the society. You know, he's just carrying along in with the society. He dresses well because he's just running on other people's postulates in society. He should dress well. On his own self-determinism, however, his level of acceptance is starved and in rags. If he could have some starvation, at least the sensation of starvation, he would have more sensation than he's capable of experiencing. You know, it'd be experience. If he could have some rags, they'd really be his rags. The clothes that are sitting on him aren't his. He's a sort of a kept thing. He doesn't feel like he owns anything. He doesn't feel like any part of life belongs to him. And therefore, starved and in rags, which is acceptance level, makes him quite happy. You wonder occasionally why somebody says, gee, you know, look at those crushed eyeballs. Oh, boy, aren't they beautiful. You know, well, sure, I can sure fill those in. Well, he can't have his own eyes. You're giving him the first pair of eyes that he's been able to call his own for a long time, a pair of mocked-up, crushed eyeballs. Well, you'd say, this bird sure is poor. He's sure poor. He's a real pauper. Well, actually, that's what he is. He's poor. What can he have? Well, that's acceptance level. So you have to find out what he can have, because his total belief, before you processed him on this, his total belief was simply this. He couldn't have a thing. He could have nothing. Well, you disabused him of this. How'd you do that? You found out what was acceptable to him. Well, the society is saying to him all the time, now look, you can't have crushed eyeballs. You can't have rags. It actually denies him these things. The various social agencies won't even permit him to starve comfortably. Somebody pick him up and feed him a bowl of soup. Society denies him these various things, and yet they're the only things he could have. Well, he, of course, is caught there between the third dynamic and the first dynamic. And he, by the way, will begin to hate the third dynamic. It's denying him the only things he can have. He can't have anything that other people can have, such as a good body and a nice suit. Yes, his body isn't in bad shape. Yes, his suit is well-pressed. He's okay. But it's not his. And the society says, you couldn't have anything worse than this. We just won't permit you. Your family name and your reputation and all that sort of thing won't permit you to have anything less than you have. Yet his level of havingness is filthy and ragged and diseased and sick and so forth. Well, he could have a body if it were in that shape. Nobody else would want it. The society, however, on its social acceptance level, says, no, no, you can't have the very things that you could have. And this catches him in between here, and he just lost. He's already practically shot, and when he comes to realize that he doesn't dare wear any old clothes, he doesn't dare go around and deny himself food. Somebody's always picking on him, say, oh, you've got to eat three meals a day, and so forth. And when he recognizes that, he just throws in the sponge. Now, you've repaired his havingness by giving him the things which he actually could have. Well, he can only have these in mock-up at first. and you're going to process him all the way on up through, and it processes very rapidly. So you're going to process him up to the point where he is able to have the things the society says he should have. Therefore, he can be in agreement with society, and at that moment, his reality on the third dynamic will be very great. Why will it be great? Well, that's because he's reached agreement with it. A person out of agreement who is having trouble with ARC is always below the point demanded of them. You see that. An individual having trouble with the third dynamic is always below the social demands of the third dynamic. A person is not above the social demands of the third dynamic and having trouble with it. These people who go around, you know, saying, well, these programs, you know, they're just made for the masses, they're just made for the mob, they're no good, they're cheap, they're this, they're that, protest, 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 third dynamic, protest, third dynamic, protest, third dynamic. You know exactly where he's sitting. He's sitting way below the third dynamic acceptance level in terms of pictures. What kind of pictures or what kind of books or stories would he read if given a choice? Fine, beautiful, esoteric things that he says the mob should accept? No, uh-uh. Junky, horrible, mean stories about apathy, rape, murder, treachery, stuff that would not only be banned in Boston, it would be banned as well in Hollywood. It'd even be banned in an executive's household in Hollywood. I mean, stuff that bad. Oh, you think I'm slamming now the motion picture industry? I'm not. They're through anyhow. The whole woof and warp of the social structure is measured in acceptance level. A structure of the third dynamic acceptance level. The acceptance level of the third dynamic, however, is not made up of a composite of acceptance levels of its individuals. In other words, if you found out the acceptance levels of 12 individuals to get their group acceptance level, you would not add up or summate and average these 12 individuals. That's really funny, isn't it? The third dynamic is not actually composed of the individual characteristics and idiosyncrasies of its unit parts. The third dynamic is not a composite of its unit parts. It doesn't sound arithmetical, does it? But then arithmetic isn't true. If you were dealing with matchsticks, this would be true, but you happen to be dealing with living beings, and you get 12, 15, 20 human beings together, and they will establish a culture which is made up from their experiences on the third dynamic, and it will only be vaguely monitored by the first dynamic. This is very, very strange. I mean, people working in social economics run up against this all the time. They just don't understand it. A government, a people, a culture is obviously made up of its component parts. The whole is merely the sum of the parts. See, they've tried to reduce man to mist, and they come a cropper this way. The whole is not, where a society is concerned, the sum of its parts. Let's take a whole bunch of guys, let's take 50 guys and get them together, and each one of these guys is pretty bad off, and he's stumbling around, and he isn't amounting to anything in life, and he's, you know, just pretty bad off, that's all. Each one of them. So we say, all right, now we average up these 50 people, and each one of them is really bad off, so therefore we've got a third dynamic. This group, then, is bad off and in bad shape. Oh, what a shock some people get sometimes when they figure that way, because it doesn't figure that way. Here was a third division one time on a battleship. Some officer came aboard, and I don't know, he flirted with some other officer's wife or something at a party, which had gotten to the ears of the captain, who himself would like to have flirted with the fellow's wife. And what they did to this new reporting officer, Lieutenant Senior Grade, was to give him the third division and then transfer out of the third division all of the good men. and then transfer into the third division everybody who had a criminal service record. Anybody with bad court martials and so forth. And calmly, without telling this lieutenant anything about it, calmly handed over to him his division after they'd done this to it. Well, it was all the bums on the ship. Crack division. It became not only the crack division of the battleship, but it became the crack division of the Navy in terms of gunnery and big guns. Fascinating. How did this come apart? How did it come about? Well, I'd heard that story when I was a kid, and I fortunately had heard it. Otherwise, I simply would have dragged out my .45 and slid back the slide and put the muzzle of it up against the roof of my mouth and pulled the trigger when I reported to Boston in the very early part of the war to take command of a corvette. They had empty Portsmouth, and that was my crew. Anybody who even vaguely could be let off from serving 7 years in accessories, which is to say denial of citizenship, anybody who had any vaguest idea that he might not immediately kill an officer, you know, he might wait for a few days, why, they had scraped together and thrown together one corvette crew. Oh, dear. It was quite amusing. I saw them come aboard, and they were dirty, and they were ragged, and their hammocks were all muddy, and, ooh, boy, this was a real foul bunch. Well, I looked through the service records. Summary court-martial, deck court-martial, summary court-martial, general court-martial, general court-martial, summary court-martial, and sentence suspended. Sentence suspended in view of the fact that he has volunteered for sea duty. Well, you'd have thought that had been the crummiest ship in the Navy. Funny part of it was that individually these people were terrible. But collectively, they presented a front which could be very dangerous to an environment. You see that? All he had to do was simply look around and recognize in themselves that we had a social group here that might, because of its numerical superiority, have a chance. They had to recognize that. When they recognized that, they straightened up, and you never saw such a crew in your life. This crew, by the way, almost starved an officer to death one day. We were going out and testing a new weapon against submarines, and this officer reported aboard to observe this new weapon. And I saw him a couple of times briefly, and then noticed he wasn't eating in the wardroom, and he wasn't eating any place, and Lord knows where he'd been bedded down. And I finally said to one of the boys up on the bridge, I said, "What have you done with Mr. So-and-so?" Silence. So I finally sent for a bosun and had this guy chased down. They'd bedded him down in a chain locker. And, yeah, that's right. They said that was the only available stateroom. It was a very wet and miserable place. And they had said, well, corvettes while at sea didn't serve much hot food. They generally served K rations. And the boys had stolen some off the Army.